Several years ago, we had a good friend with us in studio. Her name's Darcy Teal, and she's author of a couple of different books on grief. One of them, the first one she wrote called Bitter and Sweet, A Family's Journey with Cancer. A second one that's also, by the way, available on Amazon called Life After Death, On This Side of Heaven. Now, Darcy is a counselor here in the Western New York area, actually has an office in West Seneca, and is probably fairly well known to some of you who have taken advantage of her services over the years. But as a counselor, I'm not sure that she anticipated becoming an expert on grief, and I don't know if she would consider herself an expert on grief, but she had to address the issue when she lost her husband a few years ago, and that was the genesis of both of the books that she's written. Along the way, one of the respected experts on grief, a nationally known, in fact, internationally known expert on grief, David Kessler, I think, spoke into her life in a variety of different ways, and will be joining us again. Will be joining us for the first time here on Lifeline. But let me welcome Darcy back. Darcy, it's so good to have you with us.
Thanks so much, Neil.
You're back again, and you mentioned to me that David Kessler is somebody that you've had a lot of respect for over the years.
Yes, I was made aware of his website and some of his work a couple of years back, and a couple of months ago I got a flyer that he was coming to Buffalo in June, and I was super excited because he's kind of my grief hero. You know, he has published 5 books and co-authored some books with some pretty respected people in the field as well, and has been interviewed lots of different places and lots of different TV coverage, and he's doing internationally what I am doing here locally in Western New York.
Right. Well, and in checking out his website, it's obvious he is considered to be an expert on the issue and has a number of best-selling books. We welcome him to the program here for the very first time. David, thanks for joining us on Lifeline.
Neil, I'm so excited to be with you and Darcy.
Yeah, and she's right. You are coming to Buffalo. In fact, it's listed as Cheektowaga. That's a suburb of Buffalo, but you're going to be in the Buffalo area on June 12th, Rochester June 13th, Syracuse on the 14th. So you're kind of doing the New York State swing. And then you head out to places like Tucson, Arizona, and Anaheim, California, and all those really nice places. But thank you for coming to New York. We love it.
I'm glad to be going there. I love that part of the world.
So this goes without saying, nobody really ever wants to face grief, and probably no one wants to have to be an expert on grief. But let me ask you about your own experience with this. How does somebody get to be an expert in the area of grief?
Well, you're absolutely right. You know, no one would just choose this in third grade. So I had a mother who had had a kidney removed before I was born. So I grew up with her in and out of the hospital. And when I was 13 years old, she had to be hospitalized in the big city a few hours away. And she was in the ICU. It's not very friendly in the ICU in the 70s. They didn't let me in because I was 13. You had to be 14. And she was experiencing a very isolated ICU death. At the same time, my father and I were at the hotel across the street when a sniper took it over and began killing people.
What?
So as a 13-year-old, within the span of a couple of days, I had a mother die alone in the ICU, and I was in one of the first mass shootings in the U.S.
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
So, you know, when I look back on my career, because I do police work and I do aviation disasters and I work with people who are dying, I really see that, you know, my work has been a gift out of those horrible days that I'm trying to make meaning of and give to others.
Well, it gives new meaning to beauty out of ashes, you know, because,
right.
Yeah, I mean, talk about tragedy. But when you say you do police work, you're talking about helping law enforcement officials deal with grief after tragedy and after loss, that kind of thing?
Correct. I'm here in Los Angeles, and I'm an LAPD reserve specialist, and I've been doing that for about 20 years. When I first started with the police and I talked about you encounter a lot of grief, they were like, do we? But now, years later, been working with them every year, and we've done 2-day programs already this year, and really helping them understand the situations they might be walking into.
I think the average person, you just say the word grief and you think about loss, obviously, but usually associated with death. But it occurs to me there are other ways you could grieve, and for other reasons, I mean. Can you describe some of the work you've done and or, you know, other ways that people grieve besides just having lost a loved one?
Sure. We grieve over, you know, changes in our life, whether it's a loss of a job, and it can even be a positive thing. You know, you can get a promotion, but you're sad to leave the people you worked with.
Mm-hmm.
It can obviously be a pet loss. It can be a relationship loss. So we encounter many, many losses on many fronts. And of course, things like our youth are, you know, many losses. So it's actually about change. And I'm trying to help people manage the changes that most of the time we don't want in our life.
Let me throw it to Darcy for a second, let you jump in on this, because you may have anything else you want to add based on what David's saying. But I also wonder, I mean, obviously you've faced other forms of loss besides your spouse. Probably nothing tops that, but did you feel prepared in any way to deal with the death of your spouse, having perhaps lost a pet when you were a child, or a job? You know, you maybe worked at Burger King, who knows, and they let you go. I don't know.
Well, I was just thinking in general, you know, as a counselor, you know, one of my philosophies is that, you know, the whole concept of bitter and sweet, glass half empty, glass half full. And I think in the whole balance of the world, you can't have a beginning without an ending.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have a gain without a loss of some sort. So a lot of therapeutic work is about loss, whether it's related to death or not. So, you know, even getting married is the loss of singlehood. You know, you can't experience one without the other. And so sometimes therapeutic change just comes in helping people to reframe some of that. So in some ways, I've always done grief work in that sense, because mm-hmm. so much of life is about loss. But yeah, I, you know, there were certain, you know, 3 years before my husband died, my mother passed away.
Mm.
And she had a very brief, she was diagnosed with cancer and died 3 weeks later, and had a pretty awful last 3 weeks of her life, and the medical system really failed her at that time. And I didn't know that that was my training time for what was to come.
Hmm.
You know, I learned a tremendous amount from that experience. I helped her, along with the rest of my family, the best that we could to get through that. But I had definitely gained a lot of knowledge that was very, very helpful later for what was to come with Tim. So
kind of leads me to a question that I'm not sure it's the most important question, but I'm going to ask it because it's appropriate time. David, when you're dealing with, and you said, I mean, it's the glass half full, glass half empty. Like, we might be excited that our kids are now driving cars, but we might be sad that they're not still at home riding bicycles. You know, like, there's that, they're no longer as dependent on us. And so there's a sense of grief there. But I'm just wondering, is it possible, because we all will face loss in life, is it possible to prepare for such a thing? Like, to actually think through what loss is going to look like when it comes. I have two aging parents. I know the day will come when one day they're not going to be with me. Do you only deal with grief after it's happened, or is it possible to be sort of preemptive?
Well, we do have what we call anticipatory loss, where we begin to think about it, you know, as you're doing with your parents. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness, the reality is I'm not going to have my parents forever. However, we, just like you said, we can't really sit down and go, I'm going to do my homework around this grief early. But I think one of the best things we can do that we're doing on the air now is to help people realize, and it's sort of another way of saying what Darcy's saying, no one goes through this world with just roses. We get roses and thorns. You know, we get love and we get grief. And when you know that life is going to be a mixture of both, it mentally prepares you a little bit more. I feel like the people I work with who sort of had an unspoken belief that nothing was going to go wrong in their life ever are the ones that are sort of really shocked.
Mm-hmm.
And when you let that in, I think it helps. It doesn't make me shy away from life. It makes me go, oh, let me appreciate the moments I have here, the love we share. Let me understand the preciousness of this.
Go ahead.
You know, David, I'd be interested in your thoughts on this, because you have more international experience. But I've often thought a lot of the way we hear in Western culture and American culture, you know, it's kind of part of that mentality of, well, I'm brought up, I can do anything I want if I try hard enough. And I think that that has some relevance to accepting death and grief, because I think we just kind of think, well, if I don't want to die yet, I shouldn't have to. And I think other cultures kind of accept the whole concept of death and loss from birth. So I think kind of philosophically, if you can kind of throughout all of life have this attitude of embrace everything that comes, you know, not wallow in the half empty, but kind of accept that those things are going to happen. I see it as a marriage counselor, as a couples counselor, you know, when it comes to relationships, well, disappointment and hurt and forgiveness, those are all part of the package. And we just think that something's terribly wrong if we, same thing with kind of the phenomenon of helicopter parenting, the hovering thing. Well, we want our children to not experience anything negative.
That's not even healthy.
No, absolutely not, because then they're not equipped for real life, which involves disappointment and pain and all of those things.
Your take on that, David?
I think it's so true. I mean, we are raised with happily ever after, and we don't get happily ever after in marriage. We get good and bad days ever after. We get good moments and challenging moments. And I think the other, you know, thing that Darcy touched on is so true. When I go to other countries, they deal with death more on a daily basis. I can remember when I was a kid, we'd be driving somewhere and all of a sudden we'd be stuck behind a hearse. When was the last time you were stuck behind a hearse? We have so sanitized our Western world that the dead go among us now in white unmarked vans.
Right.
So we've taken death away. So we begin to see death as optional. And that has a cost.
We're going to continue this conversation. We'll be back in a moment. David Kessler is our guest. His website, David, is it grief.com? Just grief.com?
It is grief.com.
How does somebody get that website? That's unbelievable. Grief.
Long ago.
Yeah, I bet. He's actually going to be here in upstate New York in Buffalo on July 12th, Cheektowaga actually.
June 12th.
I'm sorry, yeah, right, June 12th. Rochester on June 13th, Syracuse on June 14th. Darcy Teal is author of several books. David has written five of them and is considered to be one of the world's foremost experts on healing and loss. He's also done some work with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. She's the one who invented the five, or came up with the five stages of grief, which we're going to talk about when Lifeline continues. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Our guest is David Kessler. He's a best-selling author and international expert on grief. We also have Darcy Teal with us, who wrote several books, one called Life After Death, This Side of Heaven. And the first one she wrote in response to the loss of her husband, Tim, Bitter and Sweet, A Family's Journey with Cancer, which came out in 2013, and we talked about it. I'm just curious, David, from your perspective, since you've spent so much time focused on grief, Darcy deals with it from time to time in her counseling practice, and a lot more regularly since her husband's passing and the loss of her mom, but you know, personally, I'm saying, but because this is a focus for you, let me just ask, in your travels and in your conversations and in your experience, what are some of the great, like, misconceptions people have about grief? You know, we think we know something about it, but we probably don't know as much as we need to.
Sure. I think one of the biggest misconceptions is grief is like a cold or a flu, and you're going to recover from it in about a year. And I don't think we get over grief. I think we learn to live with it. And I think we don't, you know, close the door or recover from our loved one dying. I think we bring them into our heart. And it doesn't mean we're going to be in pain forever. One of the things that I really try to do in my work is, of course, I want people to help experience the pain. But I want them to know when they go through the pain, there's still a life for them afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And part of living fully is grieving fully. But we don't want to just stay in the pain. We want to keep moving through it. So I think that, you know, people are surprised that it goes on a little longer than it does, and that it kind of is something that stays with us throughout our whole life. I mean, I don't think Darcy's ever going to forget her husband. I think he's going to be in her heart forever, and I don't think she'd want it any other way.
Right. Your seminar, by the way, interestingly, if I've got this right, is called Because Love Never Dies. But I think maybe one of the misconceptions, if I'm hearing you correctly, is that sometimes we think, maybe we're afraid to really grieve because we think if we get to the end of the grieving process, we will have stopped loving that individual. You're not saying we ever need to do that because love never dies, right?
Correct. I don't think we stop loving them, and I don't think they stop loving us. And I think sometimes the other misconception, and I see this when I work with vets many times, is that we feel like the pain is the connection to our loved one. And in time, I want to help people realize that you will stay connected to your loved one, but you will do it through love. You don't have to do it through pain only.
Okay. Darcy nodded her head when you said that. So I want to ask her what you were thinking when he was talking about that.
Well, just when that was something that I really got from your books, David, that piece about connecting through ways other than pain, you know, and somehow we do think we're dishonoring their memory or something like that if you can laugh again or you can move on or whatever it is that happens. But it was just an interesting perspective that I kind of added to my thought process about grief that, yeah, you have to kind of remember that.
So how was it you first stumbled across David's work?
I think just when I wrote my books and you know, was working with a couple of people that were working with me, you know, they did a lot of research for me on grief and loss and writers and all of that. And then that's how we found grief.com.
One of the things that you mentioned, David, earlier was that some people think that grief is going to go away in a year or something, try to put a time frame on it. But I would think no two people grieve alike. There are no two people that are the same on the planet. And we were even talking about cultures before. You know, you see sometimes people in other cultures wailing when someone grieves. And I remember going to funerals when I was a kid, when my uncle died, and my aunt was kind of there all poised and talking to people. And people were whispering in the corner saying, she's doing so well, you know. But she wasn't wailing. She probably wanted to and probably did in private, but it wasn't necessarily acceptable in our culture. So I'm just wondering, culturally and even individually, There's no proper way to grieve, is there?
No, there isn't. And grief is as unique as our fingerprint. And it can change in one family. You can have one sister that's crying and one sister that's not. And it's so different because my relationship with my mother is different than your relationship with your mother. So, of course, our grief is going to be different. Everyone has different grief. And I think that's one of the things we think about, people who we look over and they're crying too much or not crying enough, and we think they're doing it wrong. But there is no wrong.
I think one example that I go back to a lot, specifically culturally, is when 9/11 occurred. And there was all kinds of things at the decade mark of when that happened. I know that it was all over the TV stations. 10 years later, where are these people? And think it completely normal to still be discussing that 10 years later, culturally. Mm-hmm. But if you talk to about a widow who's grieving 10 years later, suddenly we say, oh, that's not normal.
She needs to get over it.
She needs to get over it, or it's just weird, or that's complicated grief, or, you know, and it's just an interesting way that we perceive certain things. Like, it's okay for us nationally to remember all of those things a decade later, but when it comes to individuals, the judgment is like, well, that's just kind of not normal.
Later, I hope we get a few minutes. Maybe, David, you can give some thoughts at the end of our conversation about what not to say to somebody who's grieving or how to support someone who's going through a grieving process, that kind of thing. Because I don't want
to
keep this just focused on individuals. I want to focus on, you know, all of us, because we may not be grieving ourselves, but somebody we may know is. But we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I want to spend a little bit of time talking about the five stages of grief, because you've actually co-authored some books with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and want to talk about that. I think most people are aware of, you know, anger and denial and some of those things. But there's a lot more information there than we may be aware of, and that's why I want to spend some time with it. David Kessler is on the air with us, also Darcy Teal. Darcy's from Buffalo and has written several books on the heels of losing her husband. She's a therapist here in the area, a counselor, and has done a lot of work, you know, working with marriage and families and that kind of thing, but also now learning a whole lot more about grief, having faced the loss of her husband. David Kessler, having lost his mom and having witnessed a mass shooting and being a part of that kind of thing, has really had to face grief early in life and has become a grief counseling expert, works with law enforcement and military and others in dealing with grief. He's a best-selling author and an international expert on grief. He's actually going to be here in upstate New York June 12th 13th and 14th. The Buffalo area on the 12th, Rochester on the 13th, Syracuse on the 14th. And I think you could probably get information about that on his website at grief.com. We'll be back with more of Lifeline in just a moment. Darcy Teal and David Kessler, they're with us in studio. Don't go away. Thanks for listening to Lifeline here on WDCX. Thank you for listening across upstate New York, northwestern Pennsylvania, and southern Ontario, and perhaps via the internet or your smartphone, wherever you may be on the planet. It's just good to have you with us and grateful that you've decided to pop in. Grief is real, and it's something we face in life. As humans, we grieve when we face loss. And so we're talking about the grieving process and some of what's involved in learning to understand it better, cope with loss, and perhaps help others who are grieving as well. David Kessler is an international expert on this, and you've seen him on television. His first book, The Needs of Dying, a number one best-selling hospice book. Mother Teresa said amazing things about it. He's worked with all kinds of important people along the way, including Michael Landon. Can you tell us about that quickly?
Yeah, I'll tell you. Michael Landon, it's hard for us to remember what that was like when he was dying, but we didn't talk about cancer the way we do now. And one of the things that was important to Michael Landon when I was working with him is that he wanted to go on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, and he wanted to talk openly about his cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that's kind of done very openly now, but back then it wasn't. And I think that's one of his amazing legacies, that he wanted to do that.
Nobody should fault him for it, right? That was part of his acceptance.
Right,
of
that, and that, and that was him wanting to be open about what it was and share his experience with his fans. And I think that was just such a brave thing for him to do. It's hard for us to remember back then that people didn't talk about cancer, and there was even a little shame attached to it, which, you know, we look back now and go, well, that's silly. But we see that, you know, he talked about his faith, he talked about his cancer, and, you know, just shared it with the world.
Darcy, I'm wondering, when you wrote your books, was the writing of those books part of your grieving process?
Absolutely. You know, I'm the intention initially, there was no thought about books, but we used a website called Caring Bridge, which at the time we were a little overwhelmed with, thinking with everything going on, I didn't have time to go look at another website, but it ended up really changing our experience because it basically was a blog. They weren't called blogs back then, but right. We were able to journal our experience and keep everyone informed. And that was when people started saying, oh, you guys should consider making this a book, because we just both had a way of writing that people got it. You know, like, it is common to talk about cancer, but to really understand on a day-to-day basis what a family goes through and how they are affected, and then how other people can support you, you know, and that became really important. And then the books, I initially started out just, it was a way for me to process what happened. But
are you still blogging?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
And can you connect at darcyteal.com? Is the blog accessible there?
Yes, it's accessible there.
Darcy Teal, T-H-I-E-L, darcyteal.com. And you've also got a website, marriageandfamilycounseling.net.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess on Facebook, Help for Healing.
Mm-hmm.
Are you on Facebook, David?
I am. I am David Kessler, because David Kessler was already taken. So I make a joke. I'm not trying to be like Spock and saying, I am Spock, I am David Kessler, just because it's the only way I could get my own name is by being I am David Kessler.
Well, it's funny because I've got a friend who's in law enforcement and does elder abuse seminars. And he was a power forward on our high school basketball team. So I had to check when she said she wanted to have David Kessler on. I go, you know David Kessler?
Right.
So I wanted to ask you, Darcy, if you were going to put yourself in a category currently, are you dealing more with denial, anger, bargaining, depression, or acceptance?
Yes.
Okay. So a little bit of everything.
Yeah. I think that's part of one of the misconceptions is that you think it's a linear process.
Right.
Well, first you go through this, then you go through this. There are pieces of it that you go back and forth through all the different stages of it. And not with the same intensity. It's been 6.5 years now. So I don't go through those stages in the same intense way that I did 6 years ago, 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years. You know, it changes. Right. But there are still certainly, you know, whenever I run into a problem on my house that I don't know how to fix, I get angry again that I'm alone.
Right.
You know, so you go through those different pieces. And
well, based on her response, David, I want you to share with us anything you can about the five stages of grief, because we've all somewhere along the line, I think, heard of them, but I got to believe there's a lot of misconceptions about them.
There certainly is. And Darcy just cleared up one of the big ones, that they are linear. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross first did the stages of dying, which were denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. And then her and I adapted them for grief. And they show up naturally. You don't have to know them. You don't have to know which one comes next. And they were never meant to be a map to our grieving. But they just do seem to occur naturally. The denial, I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe they're gone. And then comes, I'm so angry that they're gone. Then in bargaining, we have the what ifs. What if I would have done that? Might they still be alive? And then we get depressed. But depression doesn't have to mean a full-on depression. It can mean we're just sad they're gone. And then we eventually, in time, go to acceptance, which isn't that we like the loss, but we just acknowledge the reality. And just like Darcy said, you know, we're going to circle back and forth through them, and, you know, we're going to do them uniquely for us. There's no right way to do them.
Do you think that, I'm looking at the word anger here, and it jumped out at me. Let's say that someone loses, heroin addiction right now is a huge problem in Western New York. I think it is all over North America, but we hear a lot about it on the news locally. There was an upsurge in heroin deaths again recently. Let's say you lose a son or a daughter, God forbid, to a heroin overdose, and you work through some of these stages, and again, they're not linear, but in time, you come to a place where you have accepted the reality that your child is gone. But then somebody mentions the word heroin, and you're angry again. In other words, could one or another category or stage of grief sort of rear its ugly head as a result of what transpired, you know, what specific case we're talking about?
Of course, Neil, you're so right on. So in that case, exactly, someone could be, you know, being at work and they're going through their work day. And then all of a sudden someone mentions heroin and they go, oh my God, I can't believe my daughter's gone. And mm-hmm. they're back in denial for a moment.
Right.
Or like you said, maybe they get angry or they bargain. Gosh, I wonder if I had just taken them to another rehab, might they still be alive? So yes, anything can set someone off that way.
Well, and I'm thinking too, you know, the Bible says be angry, but do not sin. That there's a healthy form of anger too, and some, like mothers against drunk driving, for instance, there may be anger
right.
towards the idea of that people shouldn't be behind the wheel, and they want to do everything they can to educate others, and so it may fuel good things, but it represents anger, and I don't know, I'm out on a limb here, but it,
well, no, I think you're right. You know, anger is a very natural emotion, and we want to get it out in healthy ways. We don't want to hurt someone or hurt anything. But we do want to feel it and just let it move through us.
One of the most difficult thing for humans to do, or to one of the most difficult forms of anger, I think, is when there's really no one to be angry at. We just
right.
feel anger. And so a lot of times in therapeutic work, I really help people sort out, because what we need to blame someone. And if there's no one to blame, that's where you get into being angry at God. Well, then we'll blame God. And, you know, theologically, if you come back around to, well, really, no, God, you know, didn't decide to give Tim cancer at age 48. That's not how it works, kind of
right.
thing. So some, I think it's just hard for us to have to acknowledge sometimes we're just angry. And it doesn't mean there's anyone to blame or that anyone is guilty. It's just anger. And so that, I think that's really hard for us to get, but I think it's healthy to kind of realize that piece of it.
David, a couple quick questions before a break. Denial, sometimes called the first stage of grief, but again, there's nothing linear about all of this. So,
right.
But it is a part of the grieving process that there's a sense of denial. And I'm wondering if you think in some way, sort of God's anesthesia to help us. Is denial sort of an emotional anesthesia of some kind?
I believe that exactly, that there is a grace in denial, that it is something that disconnects us temporarily from our pain because our pain would be too overwhelming. So when I think of denial, I don't think it that you're truly denying what happened. I think of it more as you touch the pain and then you need a break and you go into that grace of, I can't believe it. And it separates us from the pain for just a few minutes. And let me just add, if I could, real quick to the anger piece. One of the things that Darcy touched on that I think is so important is I've seen people feel like, oh my gosh, I can't get angry at the person who died, or I can't get angry with God. And I've seen so many people allow themselves to finally do that, and they come back and they realize that they have a loving God who understood their anger and let them move through it and didn't take it personally. So it is important we give people permission to feel it in healthy ways.
Yeah, and as a side note, we talked a lot about the movie or the book The Shack some time ago, and I don't know if you saw it, but I think that point you just made comes out loud and clear, that God is big enough to handle our anger.
Right.
To handle the tough questions we want to throw at him. I mean, you read the book of Job and you get a pretty good picture of that. But one more quick question, bargaining. I think, you know, denial, anger, depression, acceptance, we kind of understand those at least to some degree, but what is bargaining?
So bargaining before death looks like deal making. It looks like, God, please, I'm going to go to church more often. I'm going to be a better person. I'm going to volunteer more. Let me have 5 more years with my husband, my wife. That's the deal making.
Mm-hmm.
After death, it becomes the what ifs. What if we had gone to another doctor? What if we had done one more round of chemo? What if I had brought my child to a different psychiatrist? Whatever. All that regrets and what ifs we go through.
Man, this is so rich. There is just so much here. It's unbelievable. David Kessler is our guest. He's an international grief counselor and expert. Darcy Teal is with us as well. She's an author and a counselor here in the Buffalo area. DarcyTeal.com is where you can find her on the web, and her last name is spelled T-H-I-E-L, DarcyTeal.com. More of Lifeline coming up. We've got a few minutes left. I hope you'll stick around, so don't go away. Our guest is David Kessler, international grief expert, and Darcy Teal in studio as well. She is a marriage and family therapist here in Buffalo, a counselor. You can find her online at marriageandfamilycounseling.net or her own website, DarcyTeal.com. David Kessler and his books, you can find them on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, etc., but his own website is grief.com. And David, in the final few minutes we have left here, I want you to take a second, speak from your heart. I'll allow Darcy to do the same. But to just kind of maybe tie a ribbon on this, but you know, we've only scratched the surface of the whole grief issue, and there's so much that's been left unsaid. So let me give you a minute to kind of address that from your heart.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things that I just experienced is I was over in Germany, and I was lecturing there. And I was in the city of Hamburg, and I had not been there before. And I was just taking a tour of the city, and I came across a church called St. Nikolai's Church. And I was shocked at the history, and the history is that in Nazi Germany, there was a time when Hitler was very threatened by the church's power. There was, you know, we were just beginning the war. And the Americans and the British bombed all of Hamburg and destroyed the city completely. And today, Hamburg is a beautiful city that's been rebuilt. But in the center of it, this one church, they have left destroyed to never forget. And I think that's so symbolic of our grief. When someone we love dies, there is a part of us that will be destroyed forever. But we can still build an amazing life around that sadness, around that hurt. And we can continue. And I think so many times when these bad things happen, we can go, why did God do this? But for us to remember, God didn't do this. God gets us through this. And to me, that's what makes life, just the journey I want to be on with the good and the bad day.
So powerful. Darcy, I should have let you go first because I don't know how you could follow that. But
well, I know I'm all teary-eyed here. Thanks, David.
Yeah.
I guess one of the slogans that I really like, and I'm not sure where it originated. It might be in Al-Anon or AA, but It says, look back without staring. And I think that's pretty, you know, just like all of the stages, they're all human and normal and necessary, but we don't want to get stuck any of those places, mm-hmm. you know? And so we need to look back because we learn and we grow. I think there's a really, it may sound like just words, but I think it's super significant. You know, I've talked to people who say things like, well, cancer is a blessing. And I won't ever say that. I think cancer is a hideous, vicious disease. But I do believe that you can experience blessings in your life because you have cancer. Mm-hmm. And maybe they're the only way to experience those things is through experiencing cancer. So, but I think there's a difference. Mm-hmm. Cancer's not the blessing. But there are blessings to be found anywhere, lessons to be found anywhere. And it, again, emphasizing the half full, half empty, I think all of the spiritual power is being able to look both right in the face and get to that acceptance piece.
That is so good. And I appreciate both of you speaking from your heart. David, the one question I never got to ask you, and I hope you'll take the final minute or two here to just give us some thoughts. If somebody's grieving themselves, obviously we'd encourage them to get to your seminar or get a copy of one of your books, to get a copy of Darcy's book, books on grieving. But we may know someone who's grieving, and we don't know how to reach out to them. As a matter of fact, we have friends who just lost their son to suicide and not sure how to approach that. I mean, you do what you can, but what do you say or not say? How do you help someone else who's going through the grieving process?
Such a great question. The biggest thing I want people to know is that there is no right thing to say. And the best thing we can do is say to someone, I don't know what to say, but I just want you to know I am here with you in this pain, and I walk this path with you. And just to let them know. And I think the mistake we make is to sometimes try to help them see the silver lining in their grief, and that backfires. You know, especially like you said, with someone who's had a suicide or a heroin addiction, to go, oh, well, isn't it good they're out of pain now or whatever. When someone dies, you don't see the silver lining for a long time. So just to say, I'm here with you and I love you and I'm walking this walk with you. Tell me what you need. I'm just behind you and to catch you if you need me.
Well, thank you, obviously, for your time and for sharing from your heart so much valuable information. I think that there may be some who are faced with grief. We want you to get all the help you possibly can. But if you know somebody who's grieving, maybe one of the other things you can do is, I'm here with you. Why don't we go to David's seminar together? Why don't we get one of these books and read it together? Why don't we go see Darcy, sit down and have a conversation about grief or get one of her books? There's a lot we probably can do without interfering too much and allowing our friends to grieve and to go through the process on their own. But David and Darcy, thank you both. The website grief.com is where you'll find David Kessler and information about his speaking engagements in Buffalo, Rochester, and Syracuse, June 12th, 13th, and 14th. And DarcyTeal.com, T-H-I-E-L, DarcyTeal.com is where you can get more there. Darcy, thank you. David, God bless. We'll love to have you back sometime.
Thank you so much, Neil. Thank you, Darcy.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks, David.
All right. We will be back with more of Lifeline in just a moment. Thanks for listening here on WDCX.